parable that Eve just read to us about the mustard seed is all talking about God's kingdom growing, and that's the premise behind what we're going to look at this morning about the kingdom of God and how this fits in with that. So we're going to look at the themes of celebration, and then our commitment, and then what action can we take as a result of what we've learned. Now this will be a whistle-stop tour. We can't cover everything in 20 minutes, so do come and talk to me afterwards, or if you want to learn more, talk to each other and keep exploring this topic. But first of all, we want to start with celebrating. We want to celebrate what's already going on, all the good things that we know about, and what does God say about this topic. So from the outset of the Bible, right at the very beginning in Genesis, God saw that it was very good. And not just humans, but everything that God created was very good. After every day, after everything God created, he said, it was very good. All that God has created was good. Biodiversity as a whole was created at the beginning of the Bible. Everything that God did is all about everything and biodiversity. And we are then called as humans to enjoy creation. God puts them in the garden to enjoy creation, but also to step back sometimes from our daily routines and to enjoy what God has given to us in its abundance. Because I don't know about you, but when you step outside, you see so much life and all the amazing things that God has created for us to enjoy. And we know from, again, looking at the Bible, that God sustains everything. All life is given and sustained through God. And we are a part of that life, but we are not the only part of that life. We're not separate from all created things. And something that really helped me kind of get a grip to this is something in a book by Graham Tomlin called The Widening Circle. And he talks about all of creation. And then within creation, humanity is called out to help creation be all that it's called to be. And within humanity, the church is called to enable all of humanity to be what it's called to be, to help them to enable creation to be all that it wants. So we always remain part of creation. We're never taken out of it, but we're given a particular role within creation to help it to flourish and to be what it was meant to be by God. So as a church, we can do various things, can't we? And I know you've been on you're on your eco-church journey. You're taking steps. You're doing this couple of weeks where you're really focusing on it as a community. And so already, you know, you're getting on board, you're recognising that things need to be done and what can you do when you're on your journey. You're having services like this where it's part of your worship. You're centering what God has called you to do around your teaching and your worship. You're thinking about your buildings, and I know some of your buildings don't even have electricity and heating to worry about, but where you do, you're thinking about what can you do about those things and encouraging each other in your lifestyles. You know, many of you would have walked to church this morning. Unfortunately, I couldn't walk to church this morning, but you know, some of us can walk to church, thinking about what we're doing in our daily lives, sharing things, swapping things. So there's lots of things that I'm sure you're already doing that you can celebrate, and then it's taking the next step and continuing on that journey. So you might say, well, that's all very well, but why should we even bother about this? What's our commitment? What has God called us to do in this area? Now, we could spend hours on the why. I've written this course 10 hours, and even within that, there's more we could say. Don't worry, I'm not going to spend 10 hours today talking about the why. It's something I think builds and grows as we learn and we go deeper into this topic. But I'm going to do a kind of a high-level, some key verses from the Bible, some key themes for us to grasp. And for some of us, that might be new and we might never have heard it before. For some of us, we might struggle to explain that to other people, and it gives us these kind of things to hook our ideas on. So each of us, as humans, are called to bear God's image, to be his representatives in the world. So if we are his representatives, we need to have his attitude. So we've already established that God thinks that this is all really good. God's created biodiversity, he's created everything in the world, and it's all really good. So he wants us to think the same. He wants us to safeguard what he's given so that more people can enjoy that through the generations. So we're given it as a gift, we can enjoy it, but we don't have a license to abuse it. So that we can continue that on and give it to the next generations. Because if we believe, and I hope we do, that Jesus is Lord of everything and he's in charge, then we need to be more like him in the way that we interact with creation, not the way that the world and humanity has often perhaps looked at creation as something that we can do whatever we like with. So then we come to the first reading we had today, which I hear is one that you're familiar with because you had it last week, Noah's Ark. Now, Noah's Ark is a very well-known story, isn't it? It's one that we often use with our children because it has counting, it has colour, it has animals, it has a mild threat but a happy ending. It's a great story, isn't it? It's a great story. But I think sometimes there's more depth to it than what we give it because we it almost to our children, and we forget that what does it have to say to us, especially in this realm, about salvation and Jesus and what our role is with creation. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions that are not rhetorical, so please do feel free to answer them. How many humans were saved in the story of Noah's Ark? Not six? You have to shout. So I think eight, yes, it was eight humans. So it's Noah and his wife, the three sons and their wives. So there's eight humans that were saved. How many animals were saved? Lots, yes. The Bible doesn't tell us how many animals. We know there were two, but lots. Lots, about way more than eight. Lots more animals. More species were being saved. In Noah's Ark, it wasn't just about the humans. Often we read it, don't we, from this perspective of the humans being saved. But actually, God saved so many creatures because he didn't want them to be lost. That they were important. That versus just a few humans, again, tells us that God has a passion for biodiversity and that everything matters, not just the human story. And then those first few verses that we read, verses 9 and 11, I establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you and with every living creature that was with you. This covenant was not just with Noah and with his family, this was with everything. Again, how often do we miss those words and we just think about this as being a human contract, covenant between Noah and God? This was a promise to all of creation to not destroy it again. That symbol of the rainbow is not, again, just for humanity, but it's for everything that was created and is living. And then if we skip forward to the New Testament and we see, what does Jesus say? Well, one of the most famous verses in the entire Bible, John 3:16, says this: "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life." How often do you hear that verse as God so loved the people, or God so loved humanity, or God so loved me? Is that what that verse says? It says, "For God so loved the world," and the Greek word there is cosmos. Cosmos is everything everywhere, not even just the earth, but everything that was ever created. God came because he loved everything that he had created. Jesus came for everything, not just for us. We need to sometimes broaden our thinking and our experience so that we really understand what Jesus was about and what he came for. Now, I'm not saying that we need to forget the personal Jesus. That's really important. The personal Jesus and what he did on the cross for each one of us is really, really important. But so is the cosmic Christ. And we have to hold both of those together. And sometimes one massively outweighs the other. So let's not lose sight of either of those things and hold them. We then also hear in the Bible about a new heaven and a new earth. So some people say, hey, well, it doesn't really matter. God's going to get rid of it all and start again. What's the point? Well, actually, although we only have one word for new in English, in the Greek there are two different words for new. And in this sense, it's not a new of something that's never existed before, but it's a renewal of something that's already there. So it's making good something that's already in existence. So this is about not getting rid and starting again, but a restoration to form. That what God created in the first place, all that it was intended to be at the beginning, is going to be restored and brought back. This is not about a total destruction and annihilation. So those are a few little things that we can kind of hook this on that might help us to explain why is this really important? What is the Bible saying to us? And then we get to a point in Romans 8, verse 19, that says this: "For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed." Creation is longing, and we hear lots of Bible verses about the stones crying out and the land waiting for God to come and restore it. They are waiting for God's time through the revealing of who his children really are. So who are these children? It's the church, it's us. We are those children that creation is waiting for. The earth is waiting for our voices. Where are we speaking up? Whose voices are we hearing in this place? Now, there are some amazing Christians who are speaking into this field, but we need more voices, because I don't know if any of you could name any Christian people that are speaking into this space. Probably many of the names you would think about are more secular names that are speaking into why this is important. Now, we're not going to spend any time today talking about the issue us can probably name lots of the issues that are going on in our planet, things related to greed and consumption and the land suffering. So instead, I'm going to share with you, and he's not a Christian, and I'm very sad that he's not a Christian, because he's one of my heroes, Sir David Attenborough. Many of us in this field, I think, love a bit of good old David Attenborough. And he's got many, many, many films that you can watch about this, and there's some great stuff on Netflix if you're a Netflix subscriber, about hope and about his witness statement to the world. So he's looked back on his life, and if you've not seen it, do, but I'm just going to, there's from the trailer, I'm just going to read these things, because I think they're really powerful in helping us to think about this. He says, saving our planet is within reach. We've worked out the problems, and we're working on the solutions. Most of them we can do now, and over time they help the economy. Population growth is slowing down and we're plateauing. Never has there been a better opportunity. The plan is obvious. Stop doing the damaging stuff, roll out the new green tech and systems, stabilise the population as low as we fairly can, keep hold of the natural wealth we currently have, and in 80 years we'll be past the worst of it. We can build a world with eternal energy, clean air and water, a stable and healthy world that we can benefit from forever. So what stops us? This opportunity is out of sight. Each of us is blinkered by the demands of the here and now. Big picture, long term are not in our field of vision. It must change if we are going to change. We have the choice to create a planet we are proud of, a perfect home for ourselves and the rest of life on Earth. We have a plan. We know what to do. There is a path to sustainability. If enough people see the path, we may just start down it in time. Shouldn't we as a church be leading on this vision? Don't we as Christians have so much more hope than someone like Sir David Attenborough, who doesn't have a faith in the God that we do? God has put each of us in a particular place for a particular purpose. Even though we are not here forever, we know this is not our eternal home. God wants us to put down roots. In the book of Jeremiah, when the people were in exile in Babylon, far away from their homeland, with a much stronger sense of land and home than we ever have, God doesn't say to them, "Don't worry, you'll be back home soon, just sit it out." He says this, he says, put down roots, plant gardens, have families, be involved in society. Wherever we are, we need to put down roots. We need to act where God has led us. When we look at the Bible, we're commissioned many times in this field of work. First of all, at the beginning of the Bible, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and govern it. It's not being about strict ruling and governing or having dominion, that's sometimes the word that's used, about being good stewards and servants to all that we have. And then Jesus gives us the Great Commission. Now we often use the words of the Great Commission from Matthew 28, which is wonderful, but I quite like to also look at what it says in Mark's Gospel. Because in Mark 16 it says this, he said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Preach to everything that is and everything that lives. And we can preach with our actions as much as we can with our words. It's a privilege to do this work. We are God's ambassadors in this world to do what he's called us to do. And often, if we're going to take the call seriously, we have to take some of those steps first. And sometimes they're going to be difficult and uncomfortable. And people aren't always going to understand why we're doing them. But God has given us this call to go into the world, to proclaim what God is doing, and to restore creation in word and action. Because this is also a way of showing love to our neighbours. Because if we're doing things that cause climate change and cause damage to people living in sub-Saharan Africa, dealing with floods and famines and droughts, if what we're doing damages them, then that's not a good picture, is it, of the kingdom coming on earth. Jesus says that the kingdom is here and now, so the way that we are living should model the kingdom that is to come in all its fullness later on. That we're experiencing in part now what will come in all its fullness down the line. So if we're going to bring the kingdom in, if we're going to have a good relationship with God, then we also have to have a good relationship with everything that he has made. And that means everyone, even if we don't see them across the world. along with your accounts and with your mission stats online. It's encouraging people to do a bit of an energy audit, so to get a bit of a sense of what energy is being used in your building, to switch where you have the need to switch to a renewable gas and electricity tariff, and to think about going on the Eco Church journey and gaining awards, that we're showing together that we're doing this as a community. There are things we can do as a church family. But then there are also things we can do in our corporate life together. So when we think about our discipleship, are we growing and learning to live in the light of future hope? Is that how we're living together? Is that how we're discipling each other? When we think about our mission, there are the Church of England five marks of mission. I always like to think about in a circle, that there's no hierarchy and they're all linked together. And one of the five marks of mission is about safeguarding creation. It's something the church is calling us to look at very seriously, that it's good news for everyone, not just for humanity. How are we thinking about this in terms of our worship when we come together to worship God? Are we envisaging God's peaceful kingdom coming? Are we praying for it to come? Because every service when we pray the Lord's Prayer, we say, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth. This is not just about the future, it's about now. We want that kingdom to break through into the here and now in our lives on earth. How are we choosing to live more sustainably? What choices are we making in our day-to-day lives? And there's a tool, just like the Eco Church tool for churches, that I can share with Dan, that you can do like an audit on your own life and your household. If you've not done it before, you might have done it before. And it helps you to think about what areas of your life, your family life, your household life, can you start to make changes on to move forward. Now, I can't do a sermon or talk about this without talking about food in some form or other. I used to work in food waste, it's one of my particular passions. And I'll give you a few stats and then a few things that maybe you can do in this realm. Because food is something we all have to do, isn't it? We can't get away from food. So I always think it's a good example anyway. Now, if food waste was a country, it would be the third largest emitter of carbon dioxide in the world after the USA and China. A third of all that is grown is never eaten. There's a lot of waste in our food. And in the UK alone, I think probably it's come down a little bit, but it used to be 15 million tonnes of food is wasted every year. Most of that from our houses. So I have seen what it looks like at the back of a supermarket when food is wasted, and it's horrific. And to think that that's less than 1% of what we waste as a nation makes me quite sick. So I'm very onto it when thinking about food waste. Now I still do waste some food, I can't pound my hands up and say I'm perfect. But food waste is one area that we can really think about, and there are loads of tools online that you can use to help you think about not wasting as much food. So that's one thing. And then the other realm of food, if you think about what the biggest impacts on climate are, you might think it's about kind of travel, so flying and driving, or you might think it's about recycling, you need to recycle more. And those are two very important things. But actually the biggest thing that we can do for the planet is to eat less meat and dairy. The biggest impact that we can have, we all eat way too much meat and dairy to be sustainable. So I encourage you maybe to have a meat-free day, or at least not eat meat at every meal in the day, whatever level you're at the moment, to reduce that. And that again has been something I very much reduce my meat and dairy consumption. And that's the biggest thing that we can do. So that's a few practical things. So our parable today, to come back to where we started, the parable of the mustard seed. Now mustard seeds are very small, but they grow into big bushes and trees that produce a lot. The small actions that we take can grow into big things. If in my hand now, which I don't, but if I had a mustard seed for each of us here in my hand, probably none of you could see them. Maybe Dan, if you strained his eyes in the front row, could see that I was holding some mustard seeds. But if I nurtured those and planted them in your church, you wouldn't be able to move for mustard bushes. It would fill the room. What we don't need is one or two people doing this journey perfectly. You see these programs, don't you, of the no waste person that's living off grid and they don't waste anything. Everything is perfect. That's great, but that's not what we need. We need everyone taking steps, moving forwards to making an impact in life. And knowing that what we do, what we offer to God, He will grow and He will do more than we can ever ask or imagine. That mission impossible you were talking about last week, God can make it possible. So wedge tree at the back. What are you going to offer to God today? Because the time is now. The time is now. The choice, we have a choice to make. We can move forward, we can look for the greener world and the hope of what's to come, or we can sit back and just let things simply overtake us. So I hope that's given you some food for thought. It's made you think maybe a little bit more about why we're called to do this, what we can offer to God. And I'm calling each of us to be those ambassadors, to take our mustard seeds, to nurture them and grow them.